Hello and welcome to Macintosh and Maud Haven't Seen What? The podcast where Macintosh and Maud force each other to watch movies they should have already seen.
I'm David, a.k.a. Macintosh.
And I'm Diana, a.k.a. Maud. What are we watching this week?
Hey everybody, this is David, a.k.a. Macintosh.
I'm Diana, Maud.
And this week, we watched The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
Yep.
And if you have to hear that theme one more time...
I'm gonna slap somebody. Okay, let me just say that it's a good theme, but there needed to be more of it or less of it.
Well, it's a 3-hour movie.
Okay, there definitely needed to be less movie. But the theme is good.
Yes.
They either needed more to the theme itself, or they needed to not use it quite as much. I don't know. There's a balance problem there.
We will dedicate a whole section of our talk to the score.
Okay.
Because it is such an integral part of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, the description is, a bounty hunting scam joins two men in an uneasy alliance against a third in a race to find a fortune in gold buried in a remote cemetery.
Okay.
So, just the tiniest bit of background. This is the third in a trilogy.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
It comes... the first movie was called A Fistful of Dollars.
Okay.
Then For a Few Dollars More. And this is the third. Although, chronologically, it is a prequel to the other two.
Okay.
It's kind of funny. I started out when I saw these... I saw Fistful of Dollars.
Okay.
And really, it was around high school. I had a bunch of friends who got obsessed with these movies. The Western Dusters, mm-hmm. all this stuff. And some of that was... I had to have been around the time I did The Crucible, because that was part of the costume design that we used for The Crucible. They took inspiration for some of the coats from that look.
Okay.
And it might have been related to Matrix stuff, too. But there was...
I'm guessing I'm just going to lean a little bit more on the Matrix.
Well, no, I think there was definitively a Western style that they went with those dusters. There was something specific there. Regardless, they were obsessed with it, and I had heard about it long enough that I was like, all right, I got to go give this a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started with the trilogy, and I started with A Fistful of Dollars. Mm-hmm. That is a direct ripoff remake, in fact, almost frame for frame, of... a Kurosawa samurai movie.
Yeah.
The Fistful of Dollars is.
Aren't a lot of Western films just rip off of samurai films?
Well, Kurosawa specifically. Mm-hmm. Because Kurosawa was not ripping off, but very inspired by John Ford and John Wayne movies.
Okay.
Stagecoach and things like that from the 30s.
Okay.
So Kurosawa was inspired for that and set his samurai films in... sort of the country of the west mm-hmm. of Japan. You know, Seven Samurai and these types of things. Seven Samurai then inspires Magnificent Seven and all these things.
Yeah.
But rather than this being an inspiration, it was Leone's, like, almost shot-for-shot psycho Gus Van Sant remake.
Hmm.
But it brought Clint Eastwood into some sort of fame and notoriety.
Okay.
And it really blew up with this movie. There's a really interesting little tidbit in there from Roger Ebert in the DVD copy I have, where he's like, you know, these movies were notorious for not having any continuity. These were done on shoestring budgets. In fact, this movie, and I read it somewhere, but I'll have to look at it here, was done for $1.2 million.
That's nothing.
But for an Italian film, and an Italian exploitation film, it was an enormous budget.
Yes.
And some of what I think is great about this movie is it goes to show what you can do with a shoestring budget.
I don't know about that.
To be fair, he's got set locations. What he's able to film and what he's able to pull off effects-wise is pretty impressive.
Some of it is, okay, I agree with that. Some of it is pretty impressive. The explosions, some of the views.
Yeah
okay. I'll agree with that.
To talk about, we are watching the 2002 remastered version.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, there's this weird little parts, and you have to be paying attention a little bit to notice,
mm-hmm.
but you can tell there's about 15 minutes of the movie where they had to redo the voiceovers, because in these movies, everything is overdubbed.
Yeah, they didn't mic anybody or have a sound guy.
And it was a tradition for Italian films because in Italy it was notoriously, you couldn't film without somebody interrupting the sound in your shot.
Yeah.
Because it's Rome.
Well, and so, then if they wanted anyone to see it, they were going to have to add subtitles or overdub in another language anyway, so there was no point.
Exactly. It just makes more sense to redub the vocals in later.
Yeah.
But because they added these scenes and didn't have a soundtrack for them, Clint Eastwood and Eli Wallach in 2002, aged 40 years now, came in and redubbed their lines, and it sounds a little weird.
It's a little disorienting. Because you're like, wait, why? And there's just bits where their mouths don't really match up.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily overdubbing. It's just the new scenes. It's just, oh, okay, these guys must have not have had good accents. It's like, no, those are the guys.
Yeah.
It's just, this is how it was done.
Yeah.
And so that's weird.
It's weird. I think it's something that I probably could have, like, explained beforehand. Because you do need a little forewarning on it. Especially when you're rolling into these.
Maybe.
Okay. Where should we start? Let's start with your overall feeling on the movie. I don't think it's great, but how do you feel about it?
It's a long walk for a short drink of water. That's this whole movie. It's a whole lot of this, and then let's ride around on a horse in the desert, and then this, and then a little bit of that, and then we shoot some people. You could take half of the movie out.
I disagree.
And it wouldn't change the story.
But I disagree.
And it would actually make it a little better.
This
would be an interesting editing assignment for somebody.
I agree. However, what you lose in cutting out certain chunks of the movie is the tension that's created.
There's an hour of this film is just nothing. That's not tension. That's boredom, and somebody saying, I really like this shot, so I want it in my movie.
Well, that's true.
Or, I really like this shot and my score, let's keep it in my movie. That's all it is. It doesn't serve the story, it doesn't serve the tension. Towards the end, yeah, that went on a little long, but they are building tension. That makes sense. It is helpful. But they do the same thing over and over again. It's like every time, let's add an extra 20 minutes.
Between the opening 20 minutes and the closing 20 minutes, there is a whole lot of stuff that just is unnecessary.
That's a lot of crap.
Now, I will hands down say, you can't do anything with the first 20 minutes where you introduce those three characters, and you shouldn't do anything with the last 20 minutes.
Tighten with the front part just a little.
A little bit, but I think those do such an amazing job of establishing the characters. And then, honestly, the movie is almost worth the watch alone just for the last about 15 minutes of the movie, when they get to the graveyard.
Maybe.
Because to me, that's an astounding scene. I still love that.
It's a good scene. I agree. But yeah, you could take out half this movie.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It is. And what's really funny is the other movies are like clock in at under 2 hours.
Great.
His other movie after this and sort of an opus was Once Upon a Time in the West, which is longer, but I feel like is tighter.
That's okay. I'm not opposed to a long movie.
Yeah. They do a lot of the same like long setup pieces, long things. And that's just the Leone style. It's, we're going to set up a gunshot or a showdown for about 3 to 4 minutes with all these guys staring at each other, and the actual gunfire is going to take about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
We're going to ratchet up the tension as high as we possibly can, and then it just explodes as quickly as possible.
Well, and that's not an unusual concept. People do that all the time to varying degrees of success, and sometimes it's done for comedic.
Yeah.
Timing, and sometimes it's done just to undercut all the time. I mean, it's not new.
I think, well, the hard thing is that for this movie, it was new.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it was very successful.
It's not as successful as some of the other stuff I've seen him do, for sure. I think Once Upon a Time in the West is a better movie.
This is the only thing I've seen of him.
Yeah.
I think this is the only young Clint Eastwood I've ever seen either.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen the Dirty Harrys. So, I mean, yeah, this is probably the youngest Clint Eastwood I've seen.
Well, let's fade that into the actors then.
Okay.
Because that's a really easy segue. So, Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
I like him. I can't say that I see much of a range this year.
You're not supposed to. I mean, yeah, that's...
And again, I say that with, I have seen very little of him.
Yeah.
He looks the same. His hair's just white and he's a little bit more wrinkly. His son looks exactly like him, just not as scrawny, which is weird. his son, Scott Eastwood, who's in Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. He's good.
I mean, his biggest claim to fame up until this point had been Rawhide. Mm-hmm. He spent six seasons on Rawhide, yeah. And that's what got him initially the roles with Leone.
Yeah, the cowboy, yeah.
He's good.
I kind of didn't... Okay, they call him Blondie.
Yes.
He's not blonde. But is it more to do with his skin color?
I don't know. Well, okay, so part of this is, and again... It might help to see those other two movies before, because throughout that, this whole thing...
I'm just going
to
let you know, that's not happening.
No, and I'm not, and I don't intend for that. But having seen it, part of the trilogy, some people call it the Dollars trilogy. That's stupid, because it's really called the Man with No Name trilogy.
Okay.
In all of these movies, he has no name. Okay. He is never referred to by name. And I think, because this is supposed to be a prequel, mm-hmm. they're calling him Blondie because... He's dusty blonde, especially for where he is.
I mean, and he's certainly the lightest skinned actor.
Yeah.
For there. So that's fine. I was just trying to see if there was something new that I missed.
No, I think he's blonde compared to Tuco for sure.
Yes.
So that might just be the only thing they're playing on. I don't know.
Okay.
But, you know, in the other movies, I'm trying to look, he's called three different names in each of the movies. Fistful of Dollars, he's called Joe, then Monko and a few dollars more, mm-hmm. and in this movie he's called Blondie. But basically everybody calls him the man with no name.
Okay.
Because the whole point is he's a drifter.
Yeah.
What did you think about the anti-hero aspect of him? Being the white, he's the white hat of this movie, and yet he's about as bad as anybody else.
Nobody's hands are clean. No, that's fine. I think they could have played into that a little bit more.
Yeah.
I feel like that suspense mm-hmm. of, okay, is he a good guy, is he a bad guy? Because, like, we introduce him, and, oh, we think he's a bad guy. Oh, wait, but he's hooked up with Tuco. It's a scam.
Yeah.
It's a bounty hunter scam. Okay, great. And that plays off great later. But the tension wasn't there for me. I was just like, oh, this is
okay. Some of that could be, and some of that could be the pace. I mean, I think there's a level to, you can pace it and mm-hmm. ratchet it up, but at a certain point, if it goes too long, you lose everybody's focus, and then it goes away.
Because then you start focusing on how long is this going to go on.
I know.
As opposed to what's happening. Yeah.
Do you think that might be an attention span thing?
No.
I don't know. Because I feel like people love the pacing of this movie, like, revere it.
They're wrong. I'm not opposed to a 3-hour movie. Zodiac, that's a 3-hour movie. And, Departed,
yeah.
is a 3-hour movie. Titanic, which I saw 6 times in the theater.
But are you okay with a 3-hour movie that's slow?
Depends on what kind of slow it is.
Yeah.
Because I'm not against a slow movie.
You don't.
No Country for Old Men is a slow movie.
You don't feel like this is slow intentionally. You feel like it's poorly plotted out on how slow it was.
Correct.
Okay. Then that's fair. We'll go to the next actor. Mm-hmm. Eli Wallach as Tuco.
He's great. I would have liked a little bit more clown aspect of him.
Yeah.
But he is a great foil to Clint Eastwood.
He is a method actor of method actors.
Okay.
With the whole crew from the Actors Studio. Mm-hmm. I don't see a whole lot of... I mean, he was in The Magnificent Seven. I thought he was in so much more stuff. And it turns out, like, I was wrong. He was in a lot of movies that I hadn't ever really seen anything of.
Well, he's the clown in the movie. And he's the ugly part, which I think is kind of funny. Because he's not he's not an attractive man, but he's not a hideous person.
Well, it's the personality.
No, and I get that. But I would have liked a little bit more of that Is he Italian?
No, Eli Wallach is actually white and Jewish.
That is surprising.
Really?
Also, not given the time it was, when it was filmed. But I would have liked that a little bit more of the, given this is an Italian director and this was done in Italy. We needed a little more commedia dell'arte.
Well, and we'll talk. It was an Italian director, Italian film crew, filmed in Spain.
Okay.
And so there's a bunch of Spanish actors throughout here, too.
Yeah. No, I get that.
They use local Spanish actors, some Italian actors that he'd worked with. It was just a bunch of mixed groups of people.
Just that commedia dell'arte quality.
Yeah.
That heightened character aspect we didn't get from him, and I would have... His character we should have.
I've got a feeling that Leone is... some of it's the context of what he was in. Mm-hmm. This is part of a tradition of basically exploitation films that we had. These guys were like the exact opposite of the Fellinis of the world and were, you know, making on the cheap pulp movies. This is where the original Django movies came out of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the original Django came out the same year as Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay.
So it's all the same tradition. What makes Leone revered over others is the artistry that he does put into it.
Okay.
Because there, and I see that definitely. There's some genuine artistry in the filmmaking he's doing versus mm-hmm. just slapping a movie together and giving it to a producer.
No,
he's trying to frame things
no,
in
I
a
get
certain
that.
Way.
Okay, so let's just say that if we were going to redo this movie,
yeah.
aside from cutting half of it out.
You're right.
I would make the ugly character a little bit more of a comedian, and to play off of the straight character that is the Clint Eastwood character, the good character.
Right.
Because when those two are together, it's great. When they're playing off each other and be like, did you think I trusted you? They, like, the one-liners to each other are great.
Well, just the there are two kinds of people, the Tuco says to him over and over, and that last bit at the end,
mm-hmm.
there are two kinds of people. Those who shoot.
Those
are dig. Now dig.
Yeah.
The last main American actor is Lee Van Cleef mm-hmm. as Angel Eyes.
What else have we seen him? Ah, he was on Gunsmoke.
Okay.
So that was one of the things. Okay, so again, I didn't have cable growing up, but Gunsmoke would be replayed, and that wasn't something I would watch, but every now and then it would just be on. Because I knew I recognized him. Gunsmoke.
Yeah, and it looks like he was a guest star in a bunch of westerns, Half Gun Will Travel, Rawhide, he did a bunch of that stuff. The thing I knew him from was For a Few Dollars
yeah.
More, because I'd seen him in the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny about that is he was kind of a good guy in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
He was sort of a white hat, sheriff-type figure, authority figure in that movie. And in this one, he is the polar opposite.
But he's not playing the same character.
No.
Okay, he can't be, clearly.
No, he's not. Because he's playing a deplorable human being. So this is one thing I love about all these movies I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
When he has a bad guy, he makes him bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lee Van Cleef, when there's the scene with the prostitute and he slaps her,
mm-hmm.
Lee Van Cleef was like, I'm not hitting her. I don't hit women. And the actress is like, no, it's fine, we'll do it. Because she's an Italian actress.
Yeah,
she's like,
it's a scene,
I'll take
just
a slap.
Pretend, yeah.
But he was vehemently opposed, and Leone's like, it's in the script, this is insistent. Because he makes his bad guys bad.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're not going to see it, so I'll go ahead and tell you this, and it's in the intro of Once Upon a Time in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Fonda, 12 Angry Men,
yeah,
Grapes of Wrath.
I'm familiar.
He's the bad guy in that movie.
Okay.
He kills a kid in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
That sounds like fun.
A child.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That seems
seeing
like...
in a Western.
No, that seems pretty normal in a Western.
Now, but
probably,
again,
okay.
1966. Imagine seeing that first scene with him and the farmer,
mm-hmm.
and him just murder those people
murder
in cold blood,
no.
throw the woman down, slap a prostitute in the face, torture Tuco in the prison camp.
I mean, I've seen all of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Those prostitutes get slapped a lot.
for me...
No, I understand all that.
And what was weird was, when I saw this initially, it kind of shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
I had a certain expectation of a Western. I think it's the just abruptness that Leone just goes, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to go there. And I'm not even going to apologize for it.
I think my problem is that him and Blondie are played the exact same way.
Mm.
And
it's really just all it is the visual between the white hat and the black hat.
Well, on the one hand, Angel Eyes has been paid to do this.
Right.
He's got a job to do, and when I've been paid, I'm going to finish my job. Like, okay, I can get that. Whereas Blondie, he's in it for something, and he doesn't want to hurt his friend. But, you know, he's not above letting him suffer a little bit when he's been a dick.
Well, like, there's a scene... Blondie has a moral conscience.
A little bit. But they're both... The way those actors perform is as though they're playing the exact same character.
Yeah.
And if they were each a little bit more nuanced, or we didn't have, you know, 20 minutes in between a scene with each one of them, where we kind of forget who everyone is.
Right.
That could be interesting to see two sides of the same coin, because that's essentially what they are. That would have been more interesting.
Okay, so let's talk about the style of the movie itself, in terms of the look, the feel, setting aside the pace of it.
It looks good.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels very Western.
Yeah.
Which is what I've come to expect from Westerns. Everyone's dirty.
Yes. That's one thing that I really felt like it was a brand revelation of.
And that was the thing we really liked about Deadwood when we watched that.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone was gross. Exactly. Everyone is gross.
And that's the way the West was.
And I really liked... I was impressed with the makeup they did on Clint Eastwood when he was dehydrated.
Oh, that was something... I was going to bring that up, too. I loved it. That was perfect makeup style.
I mean...
Some of the wounds were really good, too. The mm-hmm. shots and things like that.
Yes. And so I was impressed. And I liked it. I feel like everything seemed... Nothing was felt out of place stylistically.
What did you think about the location itself? Because we're in the foothills of Spain, which is completely different terrain than the West.
It felt like it was a lot of desert, and I feel like it should have been a little bit more green. Like, patchy, but green.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
Well, it should, you know, even in the dusty parts.
It didn't bother me.
Right. It's just even when you're in the dusty parts of the West, that's the plains. So there shouldn't be dunes. That's the only one that I think is a little concerning.
Maybe.
But it is interesting because it's a bit disorienting for the American viewer to be like, this is not what I think the West looks like at all.
No, it's not the West at all. Because, you know, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking about, okay, are they in California?
Yeah.
Can they film this in California?
But I think that's intentional.
Maybe. But there should have been more green.
Yeah.
More trees. They should have been gone through, like, at least one forest.
That's fair. I mean, they kind of do once they get to the camps, the Union camps.
Not really.
All right. So let's touch on what I think might be my favorite part of this movie, which is the score by the wonderful Ennio Morricone.
Was this his first one?
No, this was not his first score.
Was it his first big one?
It was.
Okay.
He was well established in Italian cinema at this point, and mm-hmm. he had done For a Few Dollars More. This is the first thing that just broke open wide.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then from that point, he became, I mean, for a while, he still did a lot of these movies that were huge cult following movies, but that weren't necessarily big deal studio movies,
mm-hmm.
but over time just continued to put out great score after great score. Mm-hmm. I mean, in many ways, you know, you've mentioned the theme itself, which is just so...
The theme is very, it's very iconic.
Of course.
It's been my whole life. Anytime any show or movie has a Western style scene, or a showdown, they play this theme.
Yeah.
All the time. Western or not, this is what they play. And that's okay. That's great. It does its job. Part of a little bit of the trivia was that it was meant to sound like the wolves and coyotes.
Yeah.
And so that's, I get that. It's great.
But for me, the two pieces that really are
the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. Though I really love some of the music that he does for the Civil War scenes. I just like how somber it is. Mm-hmm. That normally we get these things and it's battle and marches and it's like, yeah, that's not it at all. He's basically like, these guys were dying or were drunk or were just desperate to get out of here. And it's completely somber tone when you see the war scenes.
Uh-huh.
Which fits what the directing is going for there. Mm. But for me, the piece, The Ecstasy of Gold, which is Tuco running into the cemetery.
Yes.
Which is beautiful music.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a lot better. The quality on the film, yeah, isn't quite as good as a full orchestral version of it, which sounds incredible.
Well, that's true, I think, of all scores.
I know, but like in this case, it even gets amplified up more.
Okay.
But fits the motion of that scene and how he's running through desperately searching to find this gold. It's also been Metallica's entrance music since like 1984.
Weird.
Yeah. And a lot of bands actually use it as like their intro music. I don't know why. Probably Metallica did it first.
That's
weird. It's one weird tidbit I know.
That's weird.
The other one is, right after that, the music used in the gunfight, which I also think is when it crescendos and they're all three in their place for the standoff, I just love it. I love how that fits with that scene. That whole sequence to me between the score, I think, seals it as really, really amazing.
I don't remember that particular piece as well.
It's basically an arpeggiated form on that Ecstasy of Gold theme
that
plays into a sort of a Mexican.
It probably just all felt part as one thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It probably didn't
read to me as, since this is the first time I've seen it.
Of course.
As a different piece of music.
Those two to me though are just, that whole 15 minute sequence, you could have just done anything and I'd have just been glued to the screen.
Uh-huh.
So overall, like, you can see how he became so revered just from sort of the score alone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much seals it. I mean, 3-hour movie, not a lot happens.
Nope.
Star ratings. I originally had a pretty high one. I'm going to downgrade it just a slight bit. It's by some of the things that we've talked about, mm-hmm, I'm going to go with 3.5.
Okay.
I was going to do a 4. Because right after the movie, I was like, I was in. I was sold in.
You just love that score.
I love the score. The
last 15 minutes, but you have to work so hard to get to it. It's just not right.
It's not just that, though. I love the vibe. I love the vibe of the movie. I love the feel of the movie. And I think either you're into that,
mm-hmm,
or you're not.
Okay.
For me, it's a must-see. And if you, and like I've said to, mm-hmm, you, I think if you like this movie, then go watch all the other ones.
Yeah. Because
it's somewhat more of the same, but then there's some different storylines and different things we get to do. So that's kind of nice. You know, it's one of those, either you're going to just buy in and just go, wow, this is so cool. Or you're going to be like, why are we waiting so long? Hmm. While I have to downgrade it some because I totally agree, it's too long.
Yes, it is too long by about an hour and 45 minutes.
What would you give it?
A 2. Music's great.
Yep.
Idea's good. There are acting elements that I really liked, but everything that was good gets shat on by a lot of exposition that isn't, I mean, it's pointless.
By a lot of very, very pretty screenshots that don't mean anything.
Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. Come on.
Yeah.
And it's not solely an attention thing. It's just like, I'm literally doing nothing here.
No,
come on, let's go.
Like I say, I think it's that vibe. If you, yeah, if you buy in, then you're all sold in. But if you're not, then this is a long slog.
And I'm not against a Western.
No,
Westerns.
Believe me, I get it. It's Leone. You either buy into it and you're sold.
Well, I do not.
Or you're not bought into it. Mm-mm. And this is going to be a slog and a half for you.
Hey, it's still better than RoboCop.
It is better than RoboCop. And like you said, you've seen worse.
I totally have seen worse. I've seen worse than RoboCop.
Yeah. So, well then what are we watching next time?
The Sound of Music.
Ooh.
1965 Best Oscar Picture winner.
How bad is it that I haven't seen this movie?
This is a travesty. Just the fact that we have been together for as long as we have and you haven't seen it, I think that's what's worse.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That you've made it this far with me and you haven't seen the movie.
You know what's really sad? I don't even think I've seen, like, I've seen clips. I don't think I've seen a full scene of the movie.
We did watch the opening two numbers of The Sound of Music live, and I said, this is crap, and turned it off.
Oh, yeah.
I was offended.
I was offended, and I haven't even seen it.
To be fair, the stage version is very different from the movie.
Yeah.
So that caught a lot of people off guard, because you start, it's just weird, comparatively.
Well, that's not true. It's bad.
It was bad, though Audra McDonald is a treasure, and that's clear.
Things can be very bad, and to have good times.
That's true.
So
we're going to do that. Sound of Music.
All right. So, what movie did we see in theaters this week?
We saw Lady Bird.
The Adventures of a Young Woman Living in Northern California for a Year. That pretty much sums that up.
That's correct.
You got a nice short synopsis.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
This is the directorial debut of Greta Gerwig. And she also wrote this. She's written a lot of things that she's also starred in, but this is the first one that she's directed.
I'll say first major. She apparently has a very unknown indie movie on that she directed back in like 2008.
Oh.
But this is the first big thing that's come out in a wide release form.
Oh, okay. I thought this was her first one.
Been a long-standing indie actress and writer for past
few years. Her most recent one that was got a lot of acclaim was Frances Ha.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Netflix. I haven't seen it.
I believe she wrote that, and Noah Baumbach was the director behind that and some of the other stuff she's done. But she's also just been a character actor in a bunch of different things. We saw a little promo at the Alamo that showed, like, you know.
Yeah, that was a bad promo because that made me hate her.
Wow, really?
I don't think she can act to save her life.
Huh. I actually thought she was really natural and interesting.
No. No.
Is it that mumblecore thing?
A little bit.
Do you not like mumblecore?
I think it's let's pretend to be awkward and inept and make it seem like it's charming and it's not.
I think it is at its worst. I think at its best, it's very natural and interesting to watch.
It's a very
mixed bag.
The bits that we saw.
Yeah.
There is nothing natural or raw or vulnerable about those characters. It's just, I'm awkward, but really, I'm really full of myself and confident, and that makes me hot. That's who she plays. That's what she writes.
Yeah.
And it's none of those things, and I just want to slap you.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I get.
Which they didn't show like almost anything except the trailer for Frances Ha, which is its own completely different thing.
But the trailer had Grace Gummer, who we adore.
Yeah.
I really like her, so I'll probably end up go watching that mostly for her.
What's really weird is that one with Adam Duplass where you're like, oh my gosh, you were a baby. It was like from 2005 and they're filming it on a digital video camera.
The Duplass brothers have been around for a while.
I know. It's weird.
Okay, so this movie stars Saoirse Ronan, who she was in Brooklyn, Atonement. She's the lead in this. And then we've also got Laurie Metcalf plays her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Lois Smith plays one of the nuns at the school. And Saoirse Ronan's character, Lady Bird, her best friend is played by Beanie Feldstein, who you may not have heard of before, but she's actually becoming quite famous right now.
Uh-huh.
She is the little sister of Jonah Hill. And she's currently on Broadway as Minnie Faye in Hello, Dolly! With Bette Midler.
She's also got a few
little
credits showing up here.
There's a Timothy Chalamet, who he is the lead in Call Me By Your Name.
Yes.
Which is also getting huge buzz right now.
Yeah.
So he's got a small role here.
It's an ensemble.
Yeah, there's a lot of one-offs after that. The main players are Saoirse Ronan and Laurie Metcalf, who are wonderful.
Saoirse's the whole movie is incredibly vulnerable mm-hmm. in a really good way.
Yes.
I love the fact that we're in a Catholic high school and nobody in the administration is overly like just evil and pressuring about the Catholicism.
It's very ritualistic. That's it.
It's
a ritual and a tradition. That's how it's presented in the movie.
Yes. I think they genuinely believe, I think there's a genuine faith there.
Not presented in this movie.
Okay. I felt like there was. Yeah. But the flip side was I felt like they also genuinely cared about the kids, which is something that doesn't get shown in a lot of movies where they portray a Catholic school.
It was just a school that happens to be a Catholic school.
Exactly.
That's it. That's all that it was.
Yeah. That's just not the case in a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just raw and vulnerable and really great at playing a 17-year-old. She feels like a 17-year-old the mm-hmm. whole time.
She's just a girl who's trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Which can be hard for adult actresses to pull off.
Well, she's only 23. So yeah. She's not that far removed from it. So that's okay. But Saoirse Ronan's great. And Laurie Metcalf, I love her. She's wonderful.
It's a chance to see her finally just go full out and get to see her full range. Because a lot of times she's...
We've seen all of her comedic stuff.
Exactly.
And this is a great opportunity to see her as a very multifaceted character.
Yeah. And man, she pulls it off. I mean, I feel like she gives a near flawless performance in the movie.
Yeah, she's good.
She's, if anybody's getting nominated, she is for supporting actress by far. Yes.
This movie is going to get nominated for writing, and it's going to get nominated for, I really do believe Laurie Metcalf's going to get nominated. I wouldn't be surprised if Saoirse Ronan is nominated as well. She's been nominated before. The Academy does like her. She's been around for a little while. She's kind of one of those little phenoms.
Yeah. What about Tracy Letts as the dad?
That's Tracy Letts.
Yes.
He's great.
Writer of many Pulitzer Prize winning plays.
Mm-hmm. No, I really liked him.
Just a wonderful dad character.
Mm-hmm. Good. It's a good dad character.
Which I just like seeing in things. We'll just set that aside there. I like seeing awesome dads in movies.
So this movie gave me a lot of Juno vibes. And that it's a coming of age story. There's a lot of tension with the parents, but the parents aren't stupid or absent.
Yeah.
Which was a huge deal with Juno, because usually the parents are stupid or they're not there. And that's not the case here. And so I appreciate that.
The thing I think that sets it apart from Juno, and this isn't to say anything bad about Juno, is that this doesn't feel as... Twee seems like a harsh word. It doesn't feel as stylized as Juno was.
Oh, this is very stylized.
Huh.
This is very stylized.
I didn't get that vibe.
Okay.
I don't know.
I feel a lot about this the way I felt about La La Land.
Ooh.
Everyone thinks this is the most amazing thing they've ever seen in their lives, and I think it's shit. I do not think this movie is shit, but I think it's going to get a lot more accolades than it deserves.
Okay. I was in. I liked it.
It is from
head to toe.
It is a good movie. There are good performances. I fully expect nominations. I do not expect wins. That's where I'm drawing the line on this. I could see maybe a Golden Globe, some of those smaller awards. I don't see it taking home any gold trophies.
I could see a best original screenplay. Depending on what else we see.
It depends on what else.
It's a qualifier, but you know.
I think. Well, that's original adaptation. Sorry, I'm thinking Disaster Artist is more likely to take that prize.
Oh, well, that one, yeah.
But that would be adapted.
That's adapted.
That's adapted.
I don't know.
We'll have the argument. I think it's good. It's going to get nominations. I don't think it's going to win.
And I said it a little higher than that. I don't feel like that. I don't feel that vibe from it. I just genuinely enjoyed it
mm-hmm.
top to toe from a movie. I didn't have a whole lot of complaints about it. I bought into the characters as real for me
mm-hmm.
Without it being too over the top in any way. Like
That's fair.
I just did. And I
didn't.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing is I'm a girl. I've lived some of this.
That's fair.
So some of this is just like, whatever.
Yeah.
The thing I thought was the bet. I really loved the relationship between Lady Bird and her best friend.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I really like that. And then there's a whole thing about theater, which is very accurate.
Oh, it's so much fun.
It's very accurate.
I think that might have been when they won me over, was there's like, oh, we're going full high school theater with this movie.
It's we've lived those scenes.
I know.
It's very funny. So if I had to rate this, I would probably give it a solid 3.
Okay. Honestly, mm-hmm. I'm going 4.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
I can't explain why, which is weird, other than I felt that same vibe with like Little Miss Sunshine, where I was just like, I buy all of these characters and this situation.
See, Little Miss Sunshine, I could give a 5 to.
Yeah, I would too.
There's nothing I would change.
I mean, it's a better movie, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, but it's that same thing of, from the very first moment that I met these characters, I just bought in. There's a little bit that's ridiculous, but overall, I buy into everybody here, and everybody gets a chance to be human, which is really cool.
Well, I fully buy Lady Bird.
Yeah.
There's just some other stuff that I'm just like, ugh, whatever.
Yeah. I just like that every character got a chance to be real. Every character. Whether or not they pulled it off is debatable, but they got a chance to.
Okay.
Which you don't get in movies very often. Well, all right. Till next time.
Bye.
That's it for this episode. Please take a moment to review and rate us on iTunes. And for questions and comments, drop us an email at macintosh@gmail.com.